Hi, I'm Jean Duffy. I'm going to talk a little bit about my background and how I ended up being the object of a massive media smear campaign in 1991 in Central Arkansas, which ultimately led me to working with my great friend Linda Ives, investigating the murder of her son and his friend Don. I was in my late 30s when I graduated from the University of Arkansas Law School at Little Rock, which would have been in May of 1987. I passed the bar in June and took a job prosecuting for the city of Little Rock in July. One evening in the spring of 1990, Dan Harmon and Richard Garrett showed up my front door in Benton and asked to come in and talk with me. I knew who they were because I had prosecuted clients of theirs from time to time in Little Rock, but I couldn't even imagine why they were there. So I invited them in. They sat down with my husband and me and explained that Garrett was running for 7th Judicial District prosecutor. That would have been a 3-county district of Saline, Grant, and Hot Spring. And he said if he won the election, he wanted me to be his chief deputy. Well, I was getting weary of driving to downtown Little Rock every day. So I talked that over with my husband. And in a couple of days, I called Garrett and accepted his offer. During the campaign, for about a month, everything was going fine until one evening at a campaign event, Harmon scurried over to me in a kind of panicky tone, said, "There's a crazy rumor going around that you're a vegetarian, so I want you to join Garrett at a barbecue Saturday and chow down on some ribs for a photo shoot." I told him that wasn't going to happen because I am a vegetarian. Oh, that seemed to deflate him quite a bit. And then Garrett ended up losing the election, which I'm sure they blame on me being a vegetarian. But I had met Gary Arnold, who won the election, talked to him from time to time at campaign events, and he asked me to prosecute for him in Benton, which I accepted, so that's what I ended up doing. I soon butted heads with some defense attorneys because I refused to make illegal plea deals for DWIs, but I did raise the DWI conviction rate up from 65% to 90% in the first 6 months I was there. That, of course, raised revenue for the county, and it made Gary Arnold look good. Moving on to early 1992, the Judicial District received federal funding to establish a drug task force, but it didn't pique my interest at all, and so I didn't apply for the position to head the task force. But after a few weeks, the task force board hadn't found a suitable candidate, so they asked me if I would take the job. I thought about it and decided it was probably time to expand my experiences as an attorney, so I accepted the position. Within just a couple of days of accepting that position, Assistant U.S. Attorney Bob Govar called and asked if I would come to his office for a visit. When I did, he told me that he was heading a federal grand jury investigation of drug trafficking and public official corruption in the 7th Judicial District, primarily Saline County and Grant County. And he asked that if I developed information with my drug task force that might help him, if I would share that information with him. And of course, I happily agreed to do that. On my very first official day, Gary Arnold marched into my office, stood in front of my desk, and without apology or explanation said, "Gene, you are not to use the drug task force to investigate any public official." He turned on his heel and marched right out. I was startled, but I didn't for one second consider following his directive, and, of course, I knew that I would take any information to Bob Govar for his investigation, so Gary Arnold never had to know if we were or if we were not investigating public officials. I began hiring officers and got very lucky, as Carl was an experienced undercover officer who knew how to immediately fit in with the drug world. By the second week, Carl had confirmation that Dan Harmon called the shots in drug trafficking business in Saline and Grant County. I was also fortunate enough to find Scott, a smart young investigator who quickly won the confidence of witnesses and informants. I hired another officer, Jim, at the suggestion of Govar, but Jim didn't work out, and I had to fire him within just a few weeks, which he continues to this day to hold a grudge against me. He seems to get really excited to join anyone who is still a Harmon supporter, but I don't respond to such nonsense. The other three officers I hired were part-time, and they helped out with stakeouts and helped to set up and record buys. Scott, in the meantime, had been interviewing residents who lived around a mile stretch of railroad tracks in rural Saline County that was just north of Benton. The residents were describing to him activities of low-flying small-engine planes that came in from the southwest and lining up with the railroad tracks to go east, while slowing to stall speed with their lights off for a few seconds and then revving back up to fly away in the direction from where they came. Witnesses speculated that these occurrences were drug drops, and after Kevin and Don were murdered and laid on the same section of tracks, these residents speculated, and I think logically so, that the boys stumbled upon a drug drop and were murdered for what they saw. An interesting note about this part of the story that has never been explored by any media or government investigation other than Scott is that residents reported the plane activity to the Saline County Sheriff's Office as early as 1985, but no one followed up with an interview, and even after Kevin and Don were murdered, there was no mention in any investigation report of small airplane activity in the area. I always thought that the denial of possible evidence is a neon light pointing directly at good evidence, but obviously I was the only one that thought that. At any rate, Scott and I agreed that we didn't have the resources to investigate further, so I made an appointment to talk with Bob Govar. When Scott and I got to the U.S. Attorney's offices, we were ushered into the office of U.S. Attorney Chuck Banks. Of the more than a dozen times I visited Govar, that had never happened before, so I was pleased that the top guy was taking an interest. Scott brought in an aerial map that he used to explain the path of the planes, and he gave Banks his file of witnesses' statements. Banks promised to call us back to testify before the grand jury, but that never happened, and Banks never even mentioned it to Govar. Although my task force was busy, Arnold was wondering why my weekly reports didn't show much. This, of course, was because there was more criminal activity happening among our public officials than out on the streets. Carl, who looked every bit the part of a Ku Klux Klansman, was getting close to infiltrating the area's illustrious KKK group, which met in Grant County. Govar seemed particularly interested in where this was going, but Carl was shut down with the rest of us. I can't say that I wasn't relieved about that. Dan Harmon won Gary Arnold's position as the district prosecutor in June and was going to become my boss. All Harmon had to do was wait until he took office on January 1, 1991, and he could fire me and disband the task force. Harmon didn't think that was going to be good enough, so he and co wanted to completely destroy my credibility. Harmon wasted no time using two unethical reporters, and they waged a smear campaign. Hollenbeck and Thomas never once contacted me for a comment, although I couldn't have responded anyway without exposing Govar's investigation. So I just stayed quiet. And the quieter I stayed, the uglier the accusations got, which went from making illegal arrests to stealing task force funds. The board of directors made an effort to support me, but I really couldn't give them a reason without jeopardizing Govar's investigation. I was finally fired because the board determined that the media had made me and the task force ineffective. Actually, the opposite was true. I was a well-known foe by now of Dan Harmon, and the criminal element over which Harmon frequently wielded his power against them to keep them in line, and were now becoming my good friends. I had even prosecuted some of them, but they appreciated being treated fairly for once. Then, when I was in hiding, I met with them periodically, and a couple of them offered to have Harmon killed. I laughed it off, but now I wonder how many lives would have benefited if I had accepted their offer. Be that as it may, when Harmon took office, he and Cole wasted no time. Cole issued a subpoena requiring me to take Harmon, who is now by now the district prosecutor, to take him all of my task force files. It's amazing to me that they had the moxie to do such a thing, but doing so speaks to how much control they had over the media. No one questioned the legality, much less the fairness, of putting the lives of my informants and witnesses in jeopardy, and there is no question that Harmon offs witnesses against him. So, of course, I refused to respond to the subpoena, giving Cole an excuse to issue two felony warrants for my arrest, for which he announced that when arrested, I would not be allowed to bond out. With a purported $50,000 hit on me, I went into hiding. Then Cole impaneled a county grand jury, appointing Harmon to lead, of course, to indict me for all the illegal activities Harmon had been telling the media for months. There was, of course, no evidence whatsoever of anything I had done wrong, and the grand jury stood up to Harmon and refused to hand him the indictments against me he and Cole wanted. While in hiding, I awaited the imminent indictments against Harmon, Cole, and many other public officials. But one evening, I got a call from Arkansas Gazette reporter Chris Day. He told me something that I absolutely did not believe, but what he said is exactly what happened. Chris said that a high-level informant of his told him that U.S. Attorney Chuck Banks was going to hold a press conference, clear Harmon and all other public officials who were being investigated by Govar, and send the grand jurors home. Banks would then be rewarded with a federal judgeship nomination from President George H.W. Bush. And that's what happened. Like a lightning bolt, I understood. Solving the murders of Kevin and Don, which, if investigated further, would of course connect to MENA, which would expose Bush as part of the MENA operation. But at that time, I didn't know enough facts to know how to even talk about MENA. But I learned.